following teleconference is for Karen Connor with Economic Policy Institute on Wednesday, July 6, 2011, beginning at 12:30 p.m. Central Time. Excuse me, everyone. Thank you for your patience in holding. We now have our speakers in conference. Please be aware that each of your lines is in a listen-only mode. At the conclusion of the presentations, we will open the floor for questions. At that time, instructions will be given as a procedure to follow if you would like to ask a question. Now I turn the conference over to Phoebe Silak. Nanny may begin.
Hi, everyone. My name is Phoebe, and I handle media relations here at the Economic Policy Institute. Welcome to today's call on the economic recovery. We are now marking 2 years of economic recovery, and today's call will provide a look at the recovery as well as at the economy in general 2 days prior to the release of June's job numbers. I'll now hand it over to economist Peggy Sherholz.
Thank you, Phoebe, and welcome, everyone. So I will talk about the piece that I wrote, which is the 10 facts about the recovery piece. And what it does is it offers an assessment of how the labor market has fared over the last 2 years since the official end of the recession in June 2009. So obviously, we only have 23 months of data. The June 2011 numbers will come out on Friday, but the main story will not change. The main story is this. From the start of the recession through the 18 months of the official recession, right past the official end of the recession and through the end of 2009, the labor market deteriorated significantly. And then at the end of 2009, we stopped dropping. But the thing is, we stayed there. We stayed where we were at the end of 2009. There's been very little improvement since then. The improvement that has happened has been in layoffs, not in hiring. Layoffs are basically down to where they were before the recession started. Workers with a job are now no more likely to get laid off than they were before the recession began, but hiring is barely off of its trough at the depth of the recession. Hiring is now 25% below where it was before the recession started. So it is good news that at this point, people with jobs have no more elevated chance of getting laid off than they did before. But the nearly 14 million unemployed workers of this country need hiring to pick up, and that is what's barely happening yet. So the fact that layoffs have abated but hiring has seen very little improvement means that while the unemployment situation is not now getting worse, it's also not improving substantially. The unemployment rate, of course, has dropped. It dropped from 10.1% in October of 2010 to its current rate of 9.1%. But a drop in the unemployment rate is arguably only good news if it means a larger share of the potential workforce actually finds work. And that is not happening. The entire improvement in the unemployment rate since the fourth quarter of 2009 has been due to would-be workers deciding to sit out the job search altogether. If you look at the employment to population ratio, which sidesteps the labor force issue altogether, it has not improved at all. It was 58.4% in the fourth quarter of 2009, and it's 58.4% now. I think, and, you know, if I could reorder these 10 facts, I might put this one first, the EPOP figure first. In many ways, that's the key measure that captures the spirit of this recovery. It shows very clearly that we are still treading water at the bottom of this very deep hole. All right, let me go over a couple additional measures, and then I'll turn it over to Josh. You see the same general story when you look at involuntary part-timers, workers who want a full-time job but have had to settle for part-time work. Their number shot up to 9 million in the spring of 2009 and then just bounced around 9 million for the next 18 months through the end of 2010. This measure has made a little improvement this year, but very little. It's now at 8.5 million involuntary part-time workers. You see the same thing with long-term unemployment. The length and depth of this downturn has meant we have shattered all records related to unemployment duration. If you look at the share of the unemployed who has been unemployed for more than 6 months, it, too, shot up dramatically to a record high 45.6% in the spring of 2010 and has bounced around 45% for the last year. It's currently 45.1%. So, again, we see the fact that hiring is scarcely picked up means that unemployed workers are remaining stuck in unemployment for long periods. So in all of these measures, we see that at this point, we are just holding on. We've been adding jobs for 15 months, but we've just been adding what we need to keep up with normal growth in the population, not to start putting the backlog of unemployed workers back to work. It's been 3.5 years since the start of the recession in December 2007. To get back to the pre-recession unemployment rate by December 2014, another 3.5 years from now, we would need to add roughly 350,000 jobs every single month between now and then. That's the kind of growth we need to start digging out of this. But turning to what I expect to see on Friday, what I expect is the addition of another roughly 100,000 jobs. That's just barely enough to keep up with growth in the population. So that will mean the unemployment rate probably won't budge. It will likely stay around 9.1%. We are just not going to see the 350,000 jobs we need. The economy does not yet have enough demand for goods and services for employers to need to hire new workers. So we will continue, like we have for roughly the last year and a half, to hang on, but not to make substantial improvements. And I will now turn it over to Josh to talk about his tips.
Thank you. The paper I'm going to talk about is co-authored with Isaac Shapiro, our Director of Regulatory Policy and Research. Basically, we wrote this paper to help remind people what explains why today's job market is so bad and what does not explain it. And the punchline, we think, is pretty simple. I mean, today's job market is so bad because of the damage done during the Great Recession. And the Great Recession was caused by the bursting of the housing market bubble, which erased about $8 trillion in household wealth, a larger blow to private spending power than even the stock market crash, which caused the Great Depression. This bursting bubble led to hundreds of billions of dollars of consumer spending to dry up as households no longer had wealth to support it. It led to construction businesses pulling back new building by hundreds of billions of dollars because they had overbuilt during the bubble, caused non-construction business to pull back spending on new factories by hundreds of billions of dollars as they realized their consumer base had taken a huge hit. Why would you build new factories when the ones you have aren't even being fully used? And we remain well below economic potential even today simply because this hole in overall demand for goods and services hasn't been repaired. Actions by the Federal Reserve to spur demand and the Recovery Act, these things helped a lot. The hole would have been significantly larger without them. But they were not sufficient. Households remain extremely reluctant to spend, and with good reason. They're still $8 trillion less wealthy than they were before the burst into the housing bubble. Home prices are not rising again anytime soon. In fact, they've been falling for most of the past year. So basically, the actions taken by the Fed and Congress arrested the free fall and stabilized the economy, but they stabilized it at a level far below potential. To get back to this potential, we need policies that will make up for the lost consumer spending that was sacrificed when the housing bubble burst, and we need to do that until the private sector feels comfortable enough again with its wealth and debt situation to start spending again. So all that, you know, that does explain today's economic mystery, but it's worth asking, you know, what does not explain it that is sort of out there in the policy debate? And some of the silliest claims are those arguing that some great unprecedented uncertainty about alleged anti-business initiatives or regulatory changes that keep coming down the pike from the Obama administration is somehow strangling what would be an otherwise robust recovery. You know, and this claim, to be clear, is clearly saying that it's the slow pace of job growth during the recovery, not the historic job losses we saw during the recession, that should take center stage in people examining why the job market is so bad. Today's paper shows simply that job growth during the official recovery since June 2009 has actually not been all that unusually slow relative to other modern recessions. The pace of overall job growth actually exceeds that of the 2001 recovery at the two-year mark, and it's not that far below the 1990s recovery. I mean, granted, all three of these are very slow recoveries relative to the 8 business cycles that came before them, but obviously you can't explain some policy shift that happened in 2009 to explain why growth is so slow in the recoveries of 2001 and 1990. And I'd say one thing that's very striking is that, you know, one thing that is clearly keeping job growth slow during this recovery is large declines in public sector employment. So, you know, again, contrary to some caricatures painted of economic policy in recent years, we've actually lost a substantial number of public sector jobs during this recovery. Since the recovery began, local employment is down 407,000. State employment is down. State government employment is down 60,000. Federal government employment is up, but 37,000, nowhere near enough to offset the state and local losses. The average rate of growth of public sector employment that characterized the 1990 and 2001 recession had occurred during this recovery, we'd have about 800,000 more jobs today. And the pace of employment growth would actually essentially match even that of the early 1990s recovery. So if you want to explain, you know, what has been uniquely bad during this recovery relative to other modern recoveries, it is simply the decline in public sector employment, nothing else. Private sector job growth is actually firmly in line with the two recoveries that preceded this one. You know, does this mean things are good and no policy changes are needed? You know, absolutely not. We have a jobs crisis that policymakers, including the Obama administration, seem to be ignoring. It does mean we need a serious diagnosis of why we have this job crisis, and the diagnosis is simply that we never fully plugged the hole in aggregate demand caused by the burst housing bubble. I'm sympathetic to people who want to move on from this and talk about new things. You know, the story is old. Housing bubble already seems a little passe. Policy prescriptions, more fiscal support, more monetary support, they seem old. Everyone tells me I'm naive for even bringing them up. They want new explanations to explain why things are bad. There are no new explanations that actually work to explain why the job market is so bad. The reason why the job market is so bad is simply that we have never fully emerged from what was the worst recession since the Great Depression. I think I'll end it there, and Heidi and I are both happy to take any questions.
Okay. At this time, we'll open the lines for questions. If you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad. Again, that's star 1 on your telephone keypad if you would like to ask a question. Our first question will come from Ian Swanson with The Hill.
Hi, Heidi and Josh. I guess my question is, I'm going to turn to the debt talks for just a second, and there's a bunch of things that that lawmakers in the White House are discussing that might be included in that big package, and that seems like the next big package the government's going to do that could have some kind of an effect on the economy. What are you seeing in that worries you in terms of the future labor situation, and what do you see there that you know, might give some support to the idea that it could actually help the labor situation?
This is Josh. It's actually been awfully tough to figure out what is going on in the negotiations. They've been pretty good at keeping too much from leaking out. I mean, I will say the general idea that we need to start closing the deficit in the near term worries me a lot. I mean, over the next 2 to 3 years, I am firmly a believer in the idea that we need bigger deficits, not smaller ones. And so the thing that worries me the most is that the cuts are going to take effect far too soon. And then I do have, you know, medium and long-run concerns about who's going to bear the burden of the cuts. You know, we're big believers in the things, the social insurance programs should not be on the table unless we're talking about efficiencies rather than sort of less comprehensive benefits for them. But in terms of the job situation, the number one fear I have is that the cuts are going to take effect too quickly. In the next couple of years, I think we need more fiscal support, not less. I mean, the one bit of encouraging news that's come out, I mean, everyone's heard about this, is doing a extension of the payroll tax cut. It was part of the December 2010 tax cut deal. It's not my favorite way to do fiscal support and stimulus, but it really did provide some stimulus. I think I estimated when I looked at the GDP numbers, the payroll tax cut is probably going to add about $90 billion to disposable personal income over calendar year 2011. That goes away at the end of this year unless it's extended. So the thought that even some kind of near-term support like that is on the table, I guess, is encouraging. Again, my fear is that we just start cutting far too quickly, and that's exactly the wrong way to go for jobs.
Okay, thank you for your question. Again, if you would like to ask a question, it is star 1 on your telephone keypad. Our next question will come from Mark Greenberg with Press Associates Union News.
For an average worker on the street would tell you that two things. A, the recession didn't end in mid 2009, and B, it didn't start in 2007. It started in 2001. Incomes have been declining ever since 2001. What do you say to this average worker who says, "I've been in the dumps for a decade now. How can you help me?"
Mark, hi, this is Heidi. Yeah, that worker has a point. You know, with the recession the business cycle from 2000 to 2007 was the worst business cycle on record as far as mm-hmm. jobs growth go. It was the first one we've had where mm-hmm. Median family income did not rise over the mm-hmm. course of the recession. So, obviously, you know this, we were technically in an expansion for most of that period, but for many families, it didn't feel that way. Mm-hmm. And then, on the heels of that, you know, sort of paltry expansion, this thing hit. The Great Recession hit. Mm-hmm. And though it officially ended in June of 2009, we continued to lose over 1 million jobs over the next 8 months. This is funny. I used to say people on the ground will feel like a recovery is coming when the unemployment rate starts to come down, but let me modify that to say people on the ground will feel like a recovery is coming when the EPOP starts to go up. Because as we already talked mm-hmm. about, the unemployment rate has made improvement, but it's not because a larger share of the population is getting jobs. Mm-hmm. So when we start to see a substantial increase in the employment-to-population ratio, mm-hmm. I think on the ground people will feel like we've entered a recovery, but then your larger point that the levels are still bad. Maybe we will then be, you know, everyone will agree we're headed in the right direction, mm-hmm. but the severity of the jobs crisis is going to be around for such a long time that it's gonna be a really long time before it feels like there's help in mm-hmm. the labor market.
That's not very encouraging for them. What do you say to them to give them some encouragement?
That's a good question. I think that unless substantial additional policy is changed in Washington, that we're going to see very high unemployment for the next, you know, it's going to be at least 5 years until we get down to pre-recession unemployment
mm-hmm.
rate.
Mm-hmm.
And so, the best hope we have is that Washington steps in with substantial additional support for the economy, and the chances of that look pretty small. So I don't know. Maybe Josh has other. I do not have that much encouraging news on the jobs front, I have to say.
This is Josh. No, I mean, I'll just echo that. I mean, there's very little on the horizon that looks all that encouraging to me on the jobs front. I would say, you know, that's why we need to get the diagnosis of why we are where we are right, and we started to get it wrong. In the year or so, right after the recession hit, the Obama administration comes in, they do the Recovery Act, the Federal Reserve does extraordinary things to help the economy. It seemed like everyone agreed what the problem was, and we're pulling all in the same direction, and now, bizarrely, you have this policy drift, and people are coming up with new and stranger reasons about why the economy is not responding. And I think it's a real problem. And that, like, you look at the case of Japan in the 1990s, you really can sacrifice decades at a time to bad macroeconomic policy, and I'm really afraid that that's what we're doing right now.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Our next question will come from Michael Fletcher with Washington Post.
Hey, good afternoon. What do you guys say to those who argue that we won't get out of this before households, you know, pay down their debts?
This is Josh. I think there's something to that. I mean, I definitely think if you look at what really distinguishes this recession and recovery from other ones, it's really that decline in consumer spending that is driving most things, which is, you know, not a shock. Consumer spending is the biggest single portion of spending in the economy. And what has driven that really large pullback in consumer spending since the housing bubble burst is exactly, I think, concerns about their wealth situation and their debt situation. And so basically, I think that's why we need other arms of policy, you know, fiscal support, monetary support, sort of plug the hole left by retreating consumers until they get comfortable again with their wealth and debt situation and start spending again at levels that are consistent with low rates of unemployment. I think we haven't bridged that gap yet, but I think that's exactly right. This will be over and no longer needing extraordinary government support when households are comfortable with their debt levels and are comfortable with their wealth levels again. That doesn't mean, though, that we have to tolerate 9-10% unemployment in the meantime. We can bridge that gap into that healthy economy without extraordinary support, and I think that's what we should be doing.
Yeah, and one other question. What is it – you guys mentioned that the last few – recessions have seen kind of tepid recoveries, particularly in private sector job growth. What explains that, you think? What's changed in our economic life in this country?
This is Josh again. It's a really big and important question that I'm happy to speculate on for a couple seconds, but,
sure.
but I don't think there's general agreement. I mean, the big thing that stands out to me with the last three recessions is that all of them are associated to a much greater degree with financial market stress and chaos than the recessions that came before them. You know, the eight recessions between 1948 and 1981, they're almost all caused, you know, either by running down defense spending after a war or by the Federal Reserve raising interest rates really high in an effort to fight inflation. And when you cause a recession by interest rates being too high, it's pretty easy to fix it. You yank the interest rates back down. The 2001 and this recession obviously were driven mostly by financial market bubbles that popped. And basically you had the Fed interest rates scraping at zero and the economy still not responding. I think that's in large measure because these are sort of recessions characterized by financial market distress. The jargon, people are calling them balance sheet recessions now. And I think that there's also a characteristic of that in the 1990s recession as well. You had the savings and loan crisis. You had home price bubbles in California and New England. It looked pretty big at the time. They're dwarfed by the one we had in the 2000s. So to me, what really stands out in the last three recessions is that you have recessions not caused simply by the Federal Reserve pushing up interest rates too high. You have it caused by that financial market distress. And that's meant that policy has had to do kind of unorthodox things to try to solve them. And it turns out our political system is not well organized to let policymakers do kind of unorthodox things to let the economy get back on track.
Thank you for your question. Our next question will come from Jerome Jozak with Kiplinger Knitwetter.
Yes. A week or two ago, the Business Roundtable expressed optimism about the rest of this year and said they plan to hire more. At the same time, the small businesses surveyed by the NFIB expressed pessimism and said that they weren't hiring, planning to hire more. In your look at the jobs overall, do you see a difference between big companies and small companies?
So wait, you were a little bit fading out in the first part of your question. Did you say that? Well, can you say the first thing that you said about large companies?
Yes, the Business Roundtable a week or so ago expressed optimism about the balance of this year and said they plan to hire more.
Man, okay, I'm trying to think here. I have the last time I looked. You know what? I don't have a coherent story about this. I haven't looked at the jobs numbers by business size for a while. The last time I looked, there wasn't anything. There wasn't. Oh man, I'm not even gonna try. But you know what? We could talk offline, and I could quickly check to see what the ADP numbers have recently said about hiring by firm size. But I don't have it.
Okay, I'd appreciate that.
Okay, we'll talk offline.
Okay.
Our next question will come from Damon Murphy with dailyfinance.com.
Hi, I was wondering if you could talk about the president's offhand comment about the shovel-ready jobs being not as shovel-ready as we thought. Was that a significant flaw in the Recovery Act and the stimulus?
This is Josh. I don't think so much for a couple reasons. I mean, one, if you look at the sort of the flows of spending from the Recovery Act in the first couple years, those sort of, you know, direct infrastructure projects, that was not a big share of the overall spending. I mean, well under a half, and I think I had only about a third of the spending in the first couple years were those kind of infrastructure projects. A lot of money went out the door very quickly. Things like expanded unemployment insurance benefits, the aid to states to help them plug their Medicaid obligations and education financing. Tax cuts, the Making Work Pay tax credit that shoveled about $70 billion a year out the door. So, you know, the idea that money didn't go out the door quick enough, I don't think is right. I think a lot of money went out the door very quickly. I think what most people miss in that is they think of the Recovery Act as mostly about this kind of direct public spending, and it was not mostly that. And then the other issue is, even if it was true that some of the infrastructure spending took a little longer to get out the door, and let's say, you know, heaven forbid, it was only coming out the door today, you know, we still need jobs today. And so the whole mantra about stimulus during the past couple years, which, you know, it has to be timely, you know, sadly, I think we've got a lot of time for stimulus spending to help the economy because we're going to be in a job hole for a really long time. So that one has never seemed like a huge flaw to me.
Thank you for your question. Our next question will come from Sid Mahanta with Mother Jones Magazine.
Hey, thanks, guys. Let's say that the chief fiscal support kind of maybe that comes out of these negotiations or moving into the future is some sort of employer-side payroll tax cut. When do you choose to scale it back? How soon do you need to ramp it back so that it doesn't sort of become some kind of institutionalized you know, go-to fix? I mean, do you pick an unemployment target? And also as a follow-up, could each of you sort of give your top three kind of fiscal support?
I'll talk about the first one first.
Sure.
Yeah, in terms of targets for fiscal support, as a general rule, I mean, our research director, a couple years ago when addressing the first couple meetings of the Deficit Commission, the Bowles-Simpson Commission, floated the idea, which I think was a good one, which is we should have fiscal support until we have, I think it was 6% unemployment for 6 months, which is a pretty aggressive target, but I think it's appropriate in this case because monetary policy has such little traction in today's economy. You know, we've had these zero short-term interest rates since December 2008. We're not getting much traction. And there's a reason why. Normally, low interest rates, the primary channel through which they help the economy is through the housing sector, and low interest rates are just not going to help the housing sector anytime soon. So I think we need fiscal support until we have about 6% unemployment for 6 months. You know, the employer-side payroll tax cut is does not make my top six measures of how to do fiscal stimulus, and I think there are real concerns. You know, this is a dedicated tax that funds Social Security, and so, you know, for now, we've been making up the lack in revenue from the payroll tax cuts to the Social Security Trust Fund with transfers from general revenue. You know, at some point, someone might try to change that bargain, and if that adversely affects Social Security finances, that would be a real problem, so that's one of a couple strikes I have against it, but that said, I still think it's better than nothing. So I think as a general rule, 6% unemployment for 6 months, I think there's many good reasons to look at things besides the employer side payroll tax credit or tax cut. I mean, the top three things on my list, I mean, in no particular order, and then I mean, Heidi can talk about a couple maybe. I mean, aid to states and local governments I think is key.
Mm-hmm.
Given what we showed in our report, you know, the 467,000 jobs lost since June 2009 in state and local governments, I think more than 200,000 of those have been teachers.
Mm-hmm.
So I think plugging the hole in state and local government finances would be a hugely effective stimulus. I think more infrastructure projects. I mean, you know, the Congressional Budget Office says we don't get back to year-round full employment until 2016. You know, maybe they're not shovel-ready, but they will get out the door before 2016, and they will help with jobs. Those are two of the big ones on my list, and
mm-hmm.
Maybe Heidi has some.
We could add that unemployment insurance extensions are going to expire at the end of this year. We will likely have an unemployment rate near 9%. We need to make sure those things are not allowed to expire. And then I also think we never tried a serious direct jobs creation program with this first stimulus, but doing something like that in particularly hard-hit communities would be a great step forward. And then as an overarching idea about how we do anything that, you know, as far as the formula, anything that can get done and has the best bang for the buck,
mm-hmm.
Let's do it. So, you know, even though the employer tax cut, payroll tax cut is not my favorite thing, if that's what can get through, it's not bad, and that would be great to do. But,
mm-hmm.
You know, if we could pick the top, it would be these other programs.
Okay, thank you very much.
Hey, again, if you would like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad now. I'm currently showing no questions in the queue at this time.
Okay, everyone, thank you so much for joining today's call. If you have any other questions, please feel free to call EPI or to email us. A quick way to do that is just news@epi.org. Thank you.
This concludes our teleconference. You may now disconnect your lines.